Hello and welcome back to Hacker Slacker. I'm Jacob Petticord.
And I'm Andre Garive.
And we're sitting here on some new mics.
Yes, we are. Well, I'm on the same mic, but we used to use just this mic to record the both of us.
Yep. And now we have one mic in front of each of us. The only problem is the mic I have, when it shipped, it came a little broken.
Yeah, it didn't have the right threading to hook onto the arm that he got for it, so...
Yeah, so basically it can't be mounted on anything except this tiny little stand, so I'm hunching over the table, gonna have to send it back. Hopefully it'll be here in time for next week, and we can finally have our podcast setup complete. Never need to buy anything else again, right?
We're good to go. Yeah, well, see if we can get this out to Seattle.
That's definitely how tech habits work. Okay, so first we're going to start off with some follow-up. This is just kind of some anecdotal stuff that I thought would be interesting to mention. So my history teacher just like off the cuff mentioned that this year he switched from a flip phone to an iPhone X. And I just thought that like, that was pretty...
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's kind of, you know, you don't really think about that there's people out there that are like... When the iPhone 11 comes out, it could be their first smartphone, you know?
Yeah, and we talk about it, like, most people who are going to get a smartphone already have a smartphone, so it's another reason why you can see iPhone sales kind of struggle sometimes is because everybody just has a smartphone already, but you kind of forget that there are people who don't have smartphones yet.
It's just like that long tail of the adoption curve, like you don't really think about it too often. Yeah, so, and then the next one is another thing that I actually picked up in history class. So I'm going to throw some numbers at you. This is the time it took certain technologies to reach 50 million users.
All right, shoot.
So for radio, it took it 39 years. For TV, it took it 13 years. For the internet, it took it 4 years. And for Apex Legends, it took it 4 weeks to reach 50 million users.
That is insane. Like, I had heard how fast it was growing, and I knew it was getting huge super fast, but I didn't realize it was that fast.
Yeah, when you put that in a historical context, it's just like, the internet took 4 years, Apex Legends took 4 weeks. Like, it's just shown how much quicker stuff can travel through society these days, and it's honestly really impressive.
Absolutely.
So we got to keep on moving here because we have a big show today.
Huge.
Next, Spotify made another acquisition in the podcast area. They acquired another podcast studio. This one's called Parcast. They're mainly focused on like true crime and mystery shows. And one of the interesting things here that kind of plays into some of the Elizabeth Warren stuff we were just talking about is that Spotify said that they acquired them by looking at their like traffic and like adoption numbers on Spotify. So it's like they were able to use their own data to see like which of the competitions like, you know, being really successful and then acquire that competition to like use it for their own gains, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, before we get to the news real quick, I have a couple things since we've been off for 2 weeks. We were on spring break. I actually helped my parents get set up with new phones. So my mom switched from an iPhone to a Pixel 3, and she's the first person in my family to have a Pixel device. And it's a super awesome phone. Like, obviously, I worked on it, and I used a Pixel 2 over the summer, but the Pixel 3 is really awesome. I also didn't realize how easy it is to actually move your data over. They give you a little USB-C to USB-A female adapter in the box, so you can just plug your Lightning cord into it, and it will just transfer over all of your data.
Oh, wow, that's really cool.
Yeah, it was super awesome to see that. Plus, I mean, it's an awesome phone, awesome camera. Got my stepdad an iPhone 8 because he's a little old-fashioned and we didn't want to change too much from his iPhone 6S he was using. But yeah, Pixel 3 now. She also got the Pixel Stand, which is super awesome device. Yeah, so I just wanted to mention that it's really cool to kind of see how easy it is to switch.
Yeah, in a similar vein, my dad had asked me recently, like, I'm looking to get a new phone, like, which one should I get? And I said the 10R. And so that's the one he went with. I figured he uses, like, the bigger text sizes, so the slightly bigger screen but not, like, a monster phone would probably be really good for him. And then, like, he loves photography, so, like, that versus, like, an older phone, you know, he still gets the advantage of having the same, like, main shooter that the higher-end phones do. So they were on spring break, and he was showing me a lot of the pictures he was taking, and he was, like, super impressed with the camera. So I think that was the right call, and I think that'll probably be my next upgrade, too, if I don't make it until the next round of phones.
Yeah, with these Pixel 4 leaks, I've been very intrigued about what my decision may come to be, and we'll talk more here once we get to the Apple event.
Cool. Yeah. So let's just head right on into the news. We will talk about the Apple event first.
All right. Yeah. So Apple released the Apple Card. This is what I thought was the most interesting, is that Apple is releasing their own credit card. They partnered with MasterCard and Goldman Sachs for the physical card, but they're really encouraging Apple Pay. You get better cash back. It's super well integrated into software directly on iOS. 3% cash back on Apple purchases, 2% with Apple Pay, and 1% with the card. So they're really encouraging you to use Apple Pay, which is going to force a lot more vendors to accept Apple Pay, which then gets more people to buy Apple devices. It's just a brilliant scheme overall.
Yeah, so there's a lot of like interesting things about this. So like you said, it has really cool like software integrations. It's like it's at home like right in the wallet app, so you can see all of your transactions in there. And they're like kind of, you know, using their technology and the fact that they know where your phone's located to enhance the transaction details. So like instead of just getting like the random gross transaction names, they can say like, oh, we have your location on your phone locally. So why don't we just look at where you are when you made this purchase? Oh, you're at a 7-Eleven. Let's get a nice 7-Eleven name in there, put the logo in there. So the way they showed it was just like this super clean list of like all the companies and not like the kind of gross like technical format that transactions are in most of the time.
Yeah, and it organizes all of your transactions into a really easy to see like what you're spending on, easier to budget stuff.
Yeah, it breaks it down into like categories and stuff like that, and lets you see all that stuff. So that was very intriguing. And then on top of like the cashback stuff you were talking about, one of the cool things that they are kind of pioneering is like daily cashback. So instead of like, I don't know what like typical cashback periods are on credit cards, but like every day, the money that you spent that day, you will get the percentages back in the form of like Apple Pay Cash.
Exactly. That's awesome. This is one of the coolest things I think Apple has released in a while. I'm super excited for it. And I'm obviously going to wait, I think, to see if I'm gonna switch to Pixel, but this may be one of the things that just kind of keeps me in the Apple ecosystem because it's an awesome credit card experience. At least it seems like it will be. I go to a lot of places that use Apple Pay. I love using Apple Pay. And I mean, it just overall seems like a really great use case for Apple Pay.
It's titanium. There's no numbers or anything on the card.
It's just an Apple, your name, and then the little chip.
Yeah, so I mean it's all like super like minimalistic, and then you know if you do need the numbers and like the expiration date and everything, you just go into the app and it'll generate like a one-time use one for you. So that's supposed to be more secure apparently, but I'll definitely be like just ordering one if it's free. I'll definitely have to look more into like the details of everything, but
they say no fees, but I wonder if there's some sort of you have to purchase it at the very front, like an upfront cost.
Yeah, I mean, it seems, I don't know, it would be kind of interesting if they were just shipping out a bunch of free, like, super fancy titanium cards for anybody that has an iPhone, you know, but maybe.
Perhaps. Also, they had something where when you're paying back on your credit, it will show you exactly how much you're going to be paying in interest based off of when you want to make your payments. So they seem to want it to be very user-centric, but also they are going to be getting a lot of interest money off of these credit cards.
Yeah. So the next announcement we had at this services event was Apple TV Plus. So this is that music or that video streaming service that we've been hearing about for probably years now. And I kind of missed some of these details. So
yeah,
they in Apple TV right now, like you can integrate with other streaming services, so that's something that is going to continue. With Apple TV Plus, you also get a lot of this original content that they've been creating. So I mean, we've talked about the billions of dollars they've been spending on original content. They brought out like all the big guns at this announcement. Like,
yeah, they had a lot of names, but they didn't have any like anything to show for it. They didn't have any content.
It was like at the end of the presentation, it was like, okay, Steven Spielberg is going to come out and describe this upcoming show he's doing, then Jennifer Aniston is going to come out, then Steve Carell is going to come out. And it's just like Kumail
Nanjiani.
Yeah, Kumail Nanjiani came out, and like I don't know, it was definitely like a big show of force for Apple, but Like, nothing's really been seen about these shows. I mean, I could see some of them being hits, you know, Steven Spielberg recreating this like science fiction book that he read as a kid that had a bunch of like one-off adventures of like alternate futures.
Yeah.
Obviously that sounds like it could be pretty cool. So,
and I mean, it's going to be really easy to push it on all of their devices. They have over a billion active devices.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like they did with Apple Music. They've actually like, there's still like the ongoing fight with Spotify. And one of the things I noticed recently is that Apple Music actually passed Spotify in like active users, which is obviously due to their like insane advantage of being pre-built into the phone. Apple's sent users notifications in the past, like to get them to sign up. They can basically advertise to like one of the largest, most like lucrative audiences in the world for free. And I'm assuming they'll continue to do the same thing with Apple TV Plus.
Absolutely. And so after Apple TV Plus, there's also Apple News Plus. This is another thing that we've heard about for a while. They're charging $9.99 a month for magazine subscriptions. You get a ton of magazines like New Yorker, Wired. You can add some premium newsletters as well. Two newspapers, LA Times and Wall Street Journal. It's all in the news app. I actually got the iOS update recently. It kind of took a little while to do that update, about 50 minutes to do the download, but it has the News Plus in there. I don't think I'm going to use it.
Yeah. My friend who's like super into the news, I like showed it to him and he downloaded the free trial and he was showing me some things. It seemed like there's a lot of content there, like you said, like New Yorker, Wired, LA Times, Wall Street Journal, but when you actually open these things, it's still the same Apple News interface, which I mean, some people have grown to love, but I've personally never like seen the advantage of using it over just like browsing the web like I always do for news.
Yeah, like I get a lot of my news from Twitter. Obviously, it's a good way to get news if you follow reliable sources. I get a lot of great notifications from the news app. That's a great way to aggregate your news notifications, and then I usually will look it up if I'm interested. I'll go to Chrome. Also, Chrome will like suggest articles to me. So like my first two, one's about Husker football, one is about Pixel 4 design, one's about Rick and Morty. Like it knows
sounds
all
like
my
it's
interests.
Pretty up your alley.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know. I think there are better ways to aggregate your news than Apple News or Apple News Plus in this instance. But I mean, it was inevitable.
Yeah. I mean, we heard about all these deals going down, Apple taking a 50% cut and all that. But yeah, we'll see if there's any real like traction gained on this. I could see it being fairly successful in certain markets.
Yeah.
Also, we said this one's $9.99 a month. This is the only one that's out now out of all these services we're going to talk about. And it's the only one that we have a price on. So Apple TV Plus, we don't have a price. And the final service, Apple Arcade, also no price. And I think I'm pretty sure both of those are coming in the fall. So
yes.
Apple Arcade is kind of what it sounds like. It's a subscription service for games. This one was not the way I expected it to go down. This was a lot more intense and like gamer friendly than I was expecting it to be.
It really is. iOS gaming is like, it's pretty niche, but there are some really great games on iOS, but a lot of them are like $8 a piece, and I don't want to pay $8 for one game that I don't know if I'm going to like or not.
Yeah, so I mean, this wasn't about just kind of letting you access existing games on the App Store for a certain fee. It's not like you're going to pay a fee and be able to use any of the games on the App Store. What it is it's like a new section on the App Store where if you're a subscriber, you can go in, download any of the games. There's going to be 100 plus of them included. They're going to be exclusive to Apple Arcade. And they're going to be ad-free, in-app purchase-free. And so that way, like, it's kind of just a section of the App Store where if you're a member, you get access to all of these, like, unique, supposedly higher-quality games.
And it looked like there were some big names and some big developers on board with this.
Yeah, there are some, like, legitimately interesting-looking games that I felt like I wanted to try. So if they have a free trial, I'll definitely be checking that out. One of the, like, the most interesting thing to me about this was the fact that you cannot only play these on your iOS devices, you can also play them on your Mac.
So I didn't see that, actually.
Yeah, you can play it from anything from your iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, and your Mac. So it's, I mean, if they are all like iCloud save state saved, like that's a really cool option that you have.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's all we got. Those are all coming in the fall.
For the Apple event.
That's all we got for the Apple events. We still have two other Apple-related news items to hit. So
yes,
let's get into the next one.
Before
this big event happened, they had to clear some smaller news out of the way, you know?
Yeah,
they just had to dump a few things.
They had to casually release AirPods, too.
Yeah, I've got three notes on here. We got, you know, just new iPads, new iMacs, and new AirPods.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. They were releasing stuff. Monday, they released new iPads. Tuesday, they released new iMacs. Wednesday, they released new AirPods, and I'm like, okay, AirPower is coming on Thursday.
Nope.
The box on the new AirPods says that it charges with AirPower. It name drops AirPower.
I did not see that. That's
box.
Hilarious.
MKBHD did his review and showed that off, that it says AirPower on the box of these new wirelessly charging AirPods too, and it still has not. I'm just baffled.
Well, I guess AirPower is coming then, right?
If
it's on the box.
Yeah,
so I guess we'll start with the new iPads. They updated the, was it the iPad Air, the iPad Mini?
Yes.
And the regular iPad?
And no, I think it was just,
Air
and the
okay.
Mini. So the iPad Air is essentially now the first version of the iPad Pro. There really isn't much different. The iPad Pro, the original one, has the same bezels. It's really just the same thing. Processor-wise, they're pretty similar. They both support first-generation Apple Pencil, but the original iPad Pro does have the slightly faster display.
The iPad Air gets the smart connector, too, which
yes,
is huge.
And the iPad Air has the smart connector. So not all that much between those two. So if you're like, oh, do I get a new iPad Air or an old iPad Pro? If they're in the same condition, just go with whatever's cheaper. There's really not going to be any huge use case differences unless you really want that smart connector.
This is textbook, though. Like, the pro features are trickling down to, like, the
exactly.
regular devices. So it's the same story with the iPad Mini. It's actually the exact same iPad Mini design.
The iPad Mini I'm holding in my hand, but faster.
The four-year-old design, they kept the exact same design, which I thought was kind of crazy, but they upgraded all of the internals and added Apple Pencil support. No smart connector, but that would be kind of silly on that tiny thing. So
it's really powerful, the new iPad Mini, for such a small tablet. I mean, the iPad Mini, I was telling you earlier, I was talking to our former guest, Matthew Casanelli, and he was basically saying, like, the iPad Mini is a true tablet experience, whereas the iPad Air, even at this point, and plus the iPad Pro, are more computer-like experiences.
Especially with, like, the modern definition of the computer with, like, the surfaces and everything. Like, the iPad Mini is the one that's like, oh, this is something that's very strictly not a full computer.
I think it's the perfect mobile content device. Like, if I'm on a bus ride, and I pull up Hulu on my iPad Mini, it's perfect. It's the perfect size. It's not too big. I can hold it in one hand. Albeit I do have pretty large hands. But I really like it as that kind of device.
It's just not really good for, like, productivity stuff if you actually have to type stuff out.
It's a tablet. It's a tablet in the same essence that the first iPad was a tablet.
Yeah, exactly. So it's really good to finally see that speed update after 4 years.
Yes.
Hopefully we don't have to wait another 4 years. What I'm hoping we see is in the next couple years, the new design trickles down to these iPads.
Yeah, I'm really hoping for that because I think an iPad Mini with edge-to-edge display and Face ID would be just killer.
Yep, and another thing to note with all, with the two new iPads and even the new AirPods is that they're all using Lightning, which is a very bad sign for the iPhone switching to USB-C.
Yes,
because they probably would have switched to AirPods as well.
Yes, I think it was MKBHD who also said that it seems that they are making USB-C a pro feature, and that's one of the pro features that trickled down within at least the MacBooks so far. It started with the MacBook Pro, and then it trickled down to all the other MacBooks. So perhaps we'll see USB-C in a year or two on iPad, on all the iPad lines, but it for now is just a pro a feature.
Yeah. Okay, and the new iMacs, really not that interesting. This was just a speed bump. Yeah. One of the only like interesting takes on this is that we have been using the same iMac design for an extremely long time now.
Yes.
And the bezels on it are huge.
Gigantic.
Like, by normal standards of even just, like, monitors you'd hook up to a Windows machine, the bezels are, like, about, like, 4 or 5 years, you know, too big. So yeah. I'm thinking, like, this was just a tiny little update. You know, they didn't add the new T2 chip to these things because that probably would have required a more intense redesign, which they probably weren't willing to do if they're changing form factors soon.
Yes.
So hopefully we're going to see, like, hopefully this is a sign that we're going to see, like, a more refined, you know, smaller bezel, just putting a giant screen in front of your face, yes, iMac soon.
I'd be interested to see if we get a refresh, perhaps next year, of the iMac Pro, and that is, like, all screen, all in one, which would be interesting. Also, we didn't really talk fully about the AirPods. They now have support for Hey Siri, and they also have wireless charging. They have a little bit better battery life, some connectivity bumps, a new chip, the H1 chip instead of the whatever it was called before chip. It's pretty much the same, but with wireless charging and the Hey Siri support, and I think I'm going to end up buying them just because I would love having wireless charging on my AirPods. It'd just be so easy to set it down on my charging pad. And I don't know. I think having the little bit extra battery life and the better connectivity would really help because I sometimes have some connectivity issues. One thing I do wish they would improve upon, though, is the microphone.
Yeah, they specifically did not improve the microphone or the, like, sound. Yeah. So, I mean, those are probably the two biggest areas for me.
Yeah, but Apple owns Beats, which is going to, hopefully, it seems, be releasing a new truly wireless device.
Yeah, so in the new iOS like 12.2 beta, someone went digging around and found a little animation that looked exactly like what happens when you like have your AirPods near your device, the little spinning headphones, except instead of for AirPods, they were for Power Beats. And the Power Beats are the like Beats workout headphones that kind of clip over your ear. And so basically the headphones shown were just those, but without a wire connecting them, which would be really cool. It showed that it's using the new chip that the new AirPods are using. They're black, so that's kind of the answer to people wanting black AirPods.
They look really good.
They look really slick. So I guess for me as a runner, like I connect little wings to my AirPods every time I run. And I mean, it's a system that's been working for me for like a year now, and I don't have a huge problem with it. And I like using my AirPods with the little wingtips way better than I like using any headphones with a cord. But if it could be built in and, you know, maybe look a little sleeker like these Beats do, yeah, I could be open to maybe switching to these instead of getting the new AirPods.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm just a very lucky person, and AirPods fit perfectly in my ear. Like, when they introduced the new earbud design that the AirPods are based off of, it fit in my ear perfectly, and they have ever since. The AirPods fit in my ears perfectly. I can work out with my regular AirPods in, no problem. Play basketball with them. They don't really fall out of my ears. So
dang, you got the magic ears.
I know. I got really lucky. It's like they molded them perfectly for my ears. But the Power Beats do look awesome.
Yeah, they look pretty slick. So we'll definitely be on the lookout for that. It's going to have to happen before the new iPhone. So probably at the new iPhone event or maybe sooner.
Yeah.
All right. Tesla, we kind of already knew this was happening. The Tesla Model Y, the slightly cheaper version of the Model X, It was wheeled out on stage. I watched a lot of the like press conference for this. Elon Musk took a long road down memory lane where he slowly was rambling through every single other car Tesla's made, rolled them out one by one, talked for about like 15 minutes on each one. I was like, holy cow, dude, I know where this is going. Let's just get there. Eventually, the Tesla Model Y came out, pulled up next to the Tesla Model X. Honestly, next to the Model X, it looked like a Model 3. So basically what this is it's like your typical crossover. It's a little smaller than the giant Tesla SUV. So it's not like it's slightly bigger than a hatchback, slightly smaller than a full-size SUV. But unless you were looking at it like next to a smaller car, it really wouldn't like scream SUV to you. You know, yeah. Like it's a really middling size, and it's like $10,000 cheaper. Like I think it's like $39,000 or something starting price eventually. So yeah,
that's not bad. Have you actually been in one of the Tesla SUVs?
I've been in a Model X, but like only in a showroom.
I over the summer I stayed at a Airbnb, and the family that owned it, the woman actually worked at Google. So on my first day, she gave me a ride, and that was the car she drove. And it is, like, for a commute, it's a great car. Plus, you get the electric car. You get to go in the carpool lane, which makes it a lot faster.
Yeah, so. When I was in San Francisco for spring break, I got picked up by a Chevy. I can't remember if it was a Volt or a Bolt, but it was, like, the all-electric one.
Yeah.
And the guy was telling me, like, he almost, like, pays for, like, the more expensive car by getting to use that carpool lane in San Francisco. Yeah. It's basically like a Disney fast pass that they get for being in an electric vehicle.
Yeah.
And especially as an Uber driver, exactly. Like that was a key.
That's super useful as an Uber driver. All right. So earlier we talked about Apple Arcade, which actually came out after Google made the announcement of their new game streaming service, Stadia.
Yeah, Google announced Stadia, which the name's totally random, but you know, naming's hard. They just had to pick something. Basically, it's one of these services that we've seen a million of at this point. It's where the computer's in the cloud and it just streams the video to your device. Mm-hmm. And so theoretically, like any device can play any game at very high resolution because the processing is done elsewhere. They didn't really, you know, specify how they're going to solve all the problems that all these streaming services have, which is the latency, but they're Google, and if anyone can solve it, it's going to be them.
Yeah. Obviously, all of this is dependent on network speeds, and the better experience you want, the faster Wi-Fi you're going to have.
Yeah. One of the main advantages, I guess kind of the only way I saw this thing distinguish itself, besides just being made by Google, was that there's like a YouTube integration. So let's say you're watching Ninja play Fortnite or whatever, and or like someone play a game maybe you haven't played before and you're watching it on YouTube. Well, through like their integration with YouTube, theoretically, like there could be a button there that says like just play in Stadia right below the video. You click it, pops open a new window in your browser, game starts playing right there.
Yeah. Cloud computing is awesome. That's all I have to say with that.
Yeah, so if anyone can do it, it'll be them, so we'll see how it goes. Yep. Now, the Huawei P30 Pro is out. This is the successor to kind of the best camera of the last smartphone generation. It won, like, MKBHD's blind test, and so what they have in store for us this time is four cameras on the back.
Yeah.
It was a normal shooter, a wide angle, which is kind of typical, a telescope. Yeah. Their telescoping was crazy. So their telescoping does 5x optical. For comparison, the iPhone's does 2x, and you might think like, oh, that's not that much of an improvement. But when they combined it with like their digital zoom and like software enhancements that could like stabilize the zoom so you could like it wouldn't be so shaky and blurry. Some of the like videos that I saw of this thing were crazy. Like, so you were standing on a street looking up at a skyscraper, you could zoom into the window of the building like 30 floors up and see what was on the shelf. Like, just absolutely crazy stuff. Marquez called it like super creeper mode because that is kind of seems like the main use case for it. And the way that they're able to achieve like this crazy long zoom lens is by having like a periscoping design where a lot of the lenses are kind of like going sideways and then it turns into a little square that points out of the phone like a periscope. But yeah, it's the periscoping lens. And the fourth camera after all that is a camera that's supposed to help. It's like the just-in-time camera or whatever that's supposed to be there kind of like capturing depth information for AR. So
yeah,
boom, hell of a camera setup. It's insane.
It's ridiculous. This zoom, I'm going to show you a picture and guess how many times zoomed in that is.
Probably 50 times zoomed.
That is 10 times zoomed.
Oh, wow.
But that is super high quality.
Oh, dang.
And that is, I know you guys can't see the picture, obviously, but it's a very clear picture for a 10 times zoomed photo.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of situations where it would be useful to have that. Kind of one of the interesting things about this phone, besides the camera, which is crazy, is the fact that on the last generation in the P20, they had a like kind of Face ID competitor where you could look at the phone to unlock it. But on this one, they have an in-display fingerprint sensor, and they just got rid of all the face detection stuff and made the notch smaller.
Interesting.
So it's kind of like a acknowledgement that the ideal solution is fingerprint sensor in the screen. We did a Face ID style thing when we had to, but you know, now that we can put the fingerprint in the screen, that's what we're shifting to.
Yeah, won't it be interesting if 2018 just becomes like the year of the notch, and that was the one year every phone had a notch, and then it just disappears?
Yeah, I mean, there's still the front-facing camera. This thing still has a notch. It's just the tiny little teardrop.
So
we could switch to those and hole punches.
Teardrop, hole punch, those things are, I think, going to become more common, especially in Android devices. But, I mean, if Apple ditches the notch, I think that's the death of the notch.
Yeah, I mean, if Apple is able to do, like, the sonic fingerprint reader stuff Samsung did, then I think that they could really improve the design of the new iPhones.
Absolutely.
But I don't think that they're going to back out on all the Face ID technology.
No, Face ID is great.
They keep talking about how much more secure it is, and they did all the like Animoji stuff. They're really hyping up the face tracking. So I do want them to like make you be able to also, you know, if they could have Face ID and Touch ID, that would
perfect.
Be great. Just because there's some situations, like we've talked about on the show multiple times, where just touching your phone is a lot better than having to like position your face in front of it. But yeah,
absolutely.
So this is our last news story.
32 minutes in.
There was a ton of news. We kind of just had to pick the stuff that spoke the most to us. And also there's a little bit of recency bias because I didn't check the news a lot when I was on vacation.
Yeah. I was mostly paying attention to, being with my family and new iPads.
Yeah, I was mostly on a train where I didn't have enough internet to do stuff like check the news. So yeah, here we go. The last news item is that the European Parliament approves the copyright directive. This is kind of one of those big like landmark internet privacy cases. So it's stated as like designed to update copyright law for the digital age. There's two controversial sections that the internet's kind of up in arms about. It's one section called the tax link, the link tax, not to be confused with link back. Link tax is a section of this directive that says that publishers can charge platforms, for example, like Google News, if they're displaying snippets of their content. So like Google News would have to pay to redisplay like the title and, you know, like the first little part of a news story in your Google search results if a publisher decided to like seek out that payment.
Interesting. I absolutely see how that's controversial. I think that when you post content on the internet that isn't behind a paywall, that is open and free, I think it's best for a search engine to be able to serve that up, right? If you're looking for an article, you're going to want to be able to see it. And if Google has to pay to show you that article, there's a less likelihood you're going to see that article.
Exactly. And I mean, there's entire sites that are like focused around like reposting articles that would have to like completely change the way they're showing information if they can at all.
Exactly. And obviously with something like Google, no publisher is going to charge Google to serve up part of their story, because then Google would just be like, okay, we just won't show your stories, and that's not good for anybody.
Yeah. I think that, you know, one of the things that we'll get to later is kind of about how this was, it was meant to like kind of lessen the power that companies like Google have over creators, you know, kind of empower them to take control of their content. But in reality,
I don't think it's going to do that.
Yeah. In reality, it's just kind of like Google is such a big player that they'll be above this law. And then any newcomer could have to like face these charges and then not be able to compete with Google. So yeah. The next one is along that vein, because it is saying that like it's your responsibility to make sure any site that's uploaded to your, or any content that's uploaded to your site does not infringe on anybody's copyrights. So basically YouTube would have to scan every video that's uploaded and make sure it doesn't contain copyright information before it's uploaded. Otherwise, they could be penalized. So for those of you who don't know, what happens right now is that if you upload a video to YouTube, it goes up, and then it can be reported for copyright infringement if something like that happens.
Yes. And this is super controversial on YouTube already. A lot of things with copyright strikes and just people can have their channels taken away, even if they have millions of followers. And the current system, if somebody claims copyright on your video and you want to appeal it, that appeal goes back to the person who claimed the copyright. And so if I wanted to go to MKBHD and claim copyright on his video, and he said, oh, you can't do that, this is fair use, it would come back to me and ask me, hey, is this fair use? And if I say no, then either he has to take legal action, get in contact with YouTube, or he gets a strike on his channel.
Yeah, so with this upload filter section, YouTube basically has to have some sort of an algorithm to try to stop that content before it's even uploaded. And it's that like big algorithm like kind of filtering process that would make like even accepting content from users extremely difficult for any company smaller than YouTube.
Absolutely.
It would be really hard to be able to like filter that content. And like, even if the law is just like filter it as best you can, well, doing it as best you can is probably like still expensive. So, I mean, it could lead to a whole market where like Google sells, you know, like some sort of a filtering system that lets smaller players do this, and they're just giving more business to people that have the data.
Essentially, you're creating a software dependency that not every content host is going to be able to create, and so they're going to have to pay for that.
Exactly. So, yeah, this was just a big internet thing. People said this was going to kill memes for a little bit. there's some sort of parody protections, but, I mean, there's it's a debate. There's multiple sides to it, but
another thing is telling an algorithm to figure out what fair use is just not going to happen.
Oh, yeah, it's a terrible idea.
Context is not something that a computer can understand, at least not easily. And there are so many tricks, like you can just flip it so that it's on the left and the right sides flip. You can distort the audio up a couple tones so that the audio doesn't actually match up. There are a lot of workarounds to the way that algorithms currently work.
Yeah, and I mean, if they change the ways to detect those things, people will just use different techniques.
Exactly.
Yeah, so this is something that the EU passed as like a body, and it's going to be up to the individual members to implement it over the next 2 years. So we'll see how they go about doing that, see how it plays out. But this could be the next like GDPR in the way that the EU, the way that they're setting their internet regulations, can end up affecting the rest of the world. Absolutely. And how that happens.
I'd be interested to see how this goes down in Ireland specifically, because so many tech companies host their European headquarters in Dublin. I know at least Google does, and there are several others that have their European headquarters there. So there will be a lot of pressure on Ireland. Obviously, Ireland has a lot of tax benefits for these companies. But on top of that, they're going to get pressure. They're a smaller country, and they're going to get pressure from companies that are more powerful than them.
Yeah, so more politicians kind of messing with our internet. Yep. New news, old news, same thing. All right. With that, let's go to a quick break.
All right.
All right. Welcome back. For the main topic of this show, we're going to be talking about the Y Combinator Winter Batch of 2018. It's going to be another list show. We've done these in the past.
We have a list of companies. We've done this several times before, and we'll do it again.
Yeah, I mean, as long as they keep making cool companies, I'll keep wanting to talk about them.
Yes.
So this first one's called Aurora Vision. And basically what it is it's in-person analytics. So the way it's purported to work is to use existing like security cameras and stuff that almost every company already has installed in their physical locations. And using machine learning, it can detect like a person's age, gender, and that sort of thing, and use that to give you all sort of information. Like it could give you heat maps of your floor space, like show you where people have been walking around, you know, maybe where some congestion is, see where people are waiting in line, tell you how long people are waiting in line. And it's kind of more of a tiny trend I've seen in terms of like getting better, like, in-person analytics.
Yeah. It's collecting data about your users in a much more physical sense. You're going to see where people walk. You're going to see what kind of people are in your store. All that kind of stuff.
Yep. And they're saying it's all like anonymized. Like, I mean, they're not doing facial recognition or anything.
Yeah.
Which would be much harder to do anyways. So I don't think there's a much like a very big like privacy creep factor.
Yeah. Here. I don't think there's I don't think there is any sort of moral question here as to is this right or is this wrong. These people are walking in a public place, and even I guess a privately owned public place, public in the sense of they're outside of their own home, and it's not gonna record every single face and match it with a name. Although I can see how it might come into question of what happens if this system gets hacked. That's not super great.
Well, yeah, I mean, these cameras are already operating anyways, so yeah. It's not really adding much more in terms of that. And I think it could be some pretty useful information for these companies. So
absolutely.
Good idea. Next is called Reelables. It is a roll of tape that is broken into segments. You can break them off. They're NFC labels that you can use to track your inventory. So let's say you're in a warehouse. You could break off one of these labels for each of your like products, and then you would be able to like walk around the warehouse and track where your inventory is at using just your phone.
Interesting.
So these are using some like low-energy Bluetooth chips that are supposed to have a 2-year lifespan.
Huh.
And so if you have any phone newer than an iPhone 7... you can communicate with these chips using NFC, and it's supposed to be used to kind of like give you a real-time map of where all of your products are within a warehouse and give you analytics based on that information.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see if there's some sort of use case with an automation of robots and machines within the warehouse itself that makes it such that you don't really have to have a single human in there.
That's true. I mean, a robot could come up and like talk to the chip and detect which, like exactly. What's in there and that sort of thing. So yeah.
Yeah.
They're selling these for like $100 for a roll of 10.
Yeah. So pretty expensive.
I think that they need to hit scale before this makes a lot of sense. But it's kind of set up so that you could subscribe to keep them in stock if you were like an enterprise company.
Yeah, it might be even something that'd be interesting to put on like my keys or my wallet or something. It's a really cheap tile.
That's true. It could just be a really cheap tile. I mean, it's probably not going to make sounds or anything, but
yeah. I need to put it on my AirPods. I always lose those.
It's definitely like the coolest NFC thing I've seen in a while, and like their design and everything is really cool. So check it out in the show notes if you want to see like just how slim these little labels are. I mean, it does just look like tape.
Absolutely.
The next one I kind of put in here just because it fits into a recurring theme on the show. Tell me if this sounds familiar. Netflix for podcasts. We literally just talked about this.
I think we've said that in every episode for the last 5 or 6 episodes.
There was seriously a startup, like Luminary launched last time we had an episode, and their whole thing was Netflix for podcasts, and we talked about it, you know, the exact same thing. This one's called Brew, not to be confused with The Morning Brew, which is my email newsletter. It is, they're calling it Netflix for Podcasts. It's interesting, I guess, because it's backed by Y Combinator, but it's also interesting because they take like more upstarty podcasts. Like the Luminary one we talked about was more like, we're going to acquire premium content and give it to our customers. Brew is more like kind of a platform that anyone can put a podcast on to serve it to like a subscription base. So the idea is like, you know, for us, if we had like a after show or something that we had only for people who were like premium listeners, we could put it on the Brew. And if you subscribe to the Brew, you could get our after show along with like a bunch of other shows' after shows. So yeah, it's like a place for like premium secondary content.
I really like that idea because I find a lot of podcasts that I like, and then sometimes it's not a great idea to have to pay for their Patreon or whatever for extra episodes. But if it were all kind of aggregated, that's the whole content industry at this point, is who can aggregate the best content and who can create the best original content. And if you can do one of them really well, then maybe I'll pay for your service.
Yeah. So, I mean, if we were like, I guess I would subscribe to this. It's $5 a month. I would subscribe to this probably if like three of my, like whatever, like 15 or so podcasts,
yeah,
had their like, you know, like a weekly extra content thing on here. That
absolutely
would make it worth it to me.
Yeah. I listen to some podcasts. One I listen to has a Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday release schedule. So if they had a special Wednesday podcast, you know what? I'd probably subscribe for that.
Yeah. The next startup is called Jetpack Innovation. It's pretty appropriately named for the last, like, I want to say like 5 or 10 years. This Australian guy has been making jetpacks. And so he's kind of like the guy you see on YouTube who
Yeah, I've seen this guy before.
I mean, they're literally jetpacks. Like, it's tiny jet engines strapped to his arms and his back that allow him to, you know, do jetpack things and fly. They're pretty, you know, out there, very expensive, but he will make them for you.
Yeah.
And right now they're on their 11th iteration of those jetpacks, and they currently take about a week to learn how to use. But what they're taking Y Combinator funding for, and the reason that they're kind of, you know, trying to plug into the Silicon Valley network, is that they're coming out with a new product called the Speeder, which is categorized as a personal, like, vertical takeoff or land vehicle for $380,000.
It looks like something Batman would use.
But yeah, no, it's called the Speeder, and it looks like the Speeder's from Star Wars. Like, yeah, it's this thing that you hunch over. It's kind of like a motorcycle with no wheels, and it can fly vertically and then move around. Surprise, it doesn't exist yet.
Yeah.
And from the demos, I mean, obviously it looked cool in the demos, I guess. And it doesn't, I mean, based on the existing, like, jetpack technology, it seems like it's something this guy could make. Because, I mean, if he has 4 jets that can lift a human person,
yeah,
theoretically he could just change the shape of the configuration of those and turn it into a speeder. And then I think the main idea is to increase, like, the usability. They kind of mentioned how they want it to just work, using that Steve Jobs quote. But yeah, I don't have a lot of faith in this, but, you know, if you're a VC company like Y Combinator, you invest in some moonshots, which are just like crazy companies, crazy ideas, not really traditional, but if they take off, you know, you stand to make a large amount of money.
And at least this guy's somewhat proven too. So
yeah, he has a bit of a proven track record. I still don't know how I feel about the fact that you have to pay $10,000 just to reserve one. It's kind of like that's a second round of funding for this guy, because, you know, that's, like, the product is just, like, crappy animations on this website at this point.
I mean, if you're willing to drop $380,000 on something that doesn't yet exist, I think you're going to be fine dropping $10,000 to reserve it.
Yeah, but, I mean, you might be out that $10,000, because I don't know. I wouldn't put a high probability of this thing, you know, like, Amazon 2-day shipping to my house anytime soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, so next we have a company. It was a pretty simple idea, but I thought it was pretty cool. It's called Benson AI. It's a voice ordering for restaurants. So what it is it's like a comprehensive platform to let restaurants hook up their menus to, like, voice cylinder systems. So basically, like, you set up your system on their website. Like, you're like, here's my menu items. You know, here's my hours. Here's, like, I accept reservations, this sort of thing. And then they produce applications for all the different cylinder platforms that your customers could use. So like if you're a big fan of a restaurant, you could download their like voice app on your cylinder of choice and then talk to your Alexa or your Google Home and have them like take your order and get reservations and do that sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, it really seems like an awesome idea. It's definitely something that, I mean, I'd love to use, and I'd love to see a lot of restaurants implement it. It kind of sucks because restaurants aren't the most technologically gifted industry usually, so we might not see terribly many people hooking their menus up, but maybe we'll see some bigger restaurants or some more forward-thinking restaurants do this.
I definitely went through a phase where I was like, wow, there's a lot of money I can make just by updating all the restaurants in my area's like websites to a reasonable modern website, and it wouldn't be very hard. But yeah, my favorite part about their website was that it said snacking by Siri, appetizers from Alexa, and grub with Google.
Yeah, I saw that. That's pretty great.
Nice little tagline. But yeah, one of the reasons I mentioned this was because last week we had like just mentioned about how the voice ecosystem was kind of becoming stagnant. It was just like the three main areas. Here's another one. I don't know if it'll take off, but it's just interesting that more people are trying.
Yeah, and this seems like something that should happen. And if it's not this company, it'll be someone else, right? There is something that's going to take off at some point.
Yeah. Okay, the next one is something that I think should happen. Basically, it's a company called Prometheus Fuels that is saying that they are removing CO2 from the air and turning it into gasoline. Essentially, you're able to produce, you know, like green gasoline.
That is really interesting.
Yeah, so one of the things that made me curious about this is the fact, like the angle that you could take of like, let's say I am an existing oil and gas company. You know, I don't really like this because it's a different way to produce fuels than the ways I make money off of like drilling and fracking. But, you know, if I am a car manufacturer, this is something that maybe I would throw some investment money in because I can leverage all of the, you know, gas powered engines that I'm already using instead of having to make this expensive transition over to electric that everyone is saying that they're going to have to do right now.
Yeah. I mean, their website doesn't have much information, but, hopefully we'll hear from them soon.
Yeah, I mean, not much else we can do at this point except hope that they weren't just like, you know, taking some money and running.
Yeah.
Okay, last one. This one is called Unicorn. It's a scooter startup, and their gimmick is that instead of renting by the minute, you rent by like the month.
Yeah. I like how they say adopt a unicorn for a month. It's $50 a month. It's $1.67 a day for unlimited scooter rides. It's very similar to what I have going with B-Cycle here in Lincoln and what you have going. They had a great student deal. It was like $10 for unlimited rides for a year. So obviously way, 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 way cheaper. But
yeah, this isn't like a pickup and drop off though. It's just kind of like own it.
Yeah.
It's really weird. It's like I don't know, it's almost just like you're leasing it, except you never actually own it at the end of it.
Yeah, and I don't think that's a particularly bad thing, albeit if you're going to use it for like a year,
you might as well just buy
your own.
These scooters are like $150 if you buy them on Amazon. I don't know, it's a really weird business model, and I was kind of like curious as to why Combinator chose to fund this one, but I think that they're claiming that, you know, they have better unit economics than the people who are renting these by the minute. And if they can get people who are buying into the scooter hype to say like, yeah, I'll take a scooter for the summer, or, you know, maybe they'll start renting like for days instead of months, that sort of thing could be cool.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't understand, like, if you see, oh, I'm spending as much as it costs to buy a scooter on renting scooters, what's the point?
Yeah, maybe my information's wrong and those are just like cheap scooters that would break in 3 months anyways or something, but a little confusing. But yeah, so there was a list of more companies.
Yes, I love doing these list companies. I always find out so much and then I almost always reference them later when I'm talking about tech to other people. A lot of news this week. We had the Apple event and their crazy week before. Just a bunch of crazy stuff. We'll see you next week.
Yeah, see you next week.
All right, you can contact us on Twitter at HackersPod. Send us an email at hackerslackerpod@gmail.com. We love to hear from you guys, and we will talk to you later.
Bye.